Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, geology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this January the 5th on the West Coast, and now January the 6th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I want to welcome all of the listeners on BBSRadio.com, as well as on Wind Talkers Radio Network and BlogTalkRadio.com. I've not really been paying much attention to the news other than listening to a little bit of internet radio and what's going on out there. I've resolved myself that I'm going to be focusing more toward solutions. So I'm going to be continuing my genealogical research and the debunking of history, I guess you could call it. It's become very obvious, as I mentioned on last night's show, that a lot of the research I've done over the past couple of years, the things that I've been writing about, is pretty much on target. Even going back and doing some work on my website and reviewing the Three Stooges Go to Washington, it's amazing how on point a lot of my intuition was, because many of the facts that I was presuming were there came forth in the following parts of the article. As a serial article, it sort of developed and things that I wasn't sure about, but I surmised were probably a certain way, were proven out in the next issue of the Three Stooges Go to Washington. And it became evident to me as I progressed through the work that my late editor and publisher Don Harkins saw eye to eye with me on that. He began seeing the picture very clearly, and we pretty much were in total agreement that the long-legged Mac Daddy was a phony, a fraud, a deception played upon the whole world. And it becomes an issue now of what we're going to do about it as a society, as humanity. It's underscored how much corruption is going on just by the things that I wrote about and the things that I had discovered. But I've seen that over and over again with politicians. And although we're going to talk about a different topic tonight, I want to encourage people, as I get these pages back up on my website, and I'm doing a major overhaul to the whole site, you'll see some things. If you go back and take advantage of the time that you may have, if you're looking for something, go back and read these things. I still hear the same stories coming out through the mainstream media. Washington's putting the same garbage out, and it's all spin, it's all mind control stuff. And if you read this again, you're going to understand a lot clearer what we're facing. I can tell you that the amount of disgust and anger that builds up within my own being is immeasurable, just having to do these pages over again. But at the same time, I'm reading every single word, and it's sinking in how much of a scandal this whole thing is and really, really must be addressed. Those in office are not going to do it. We're in a new year right now, and I've resolved myself that I'm going to be focusing on a lot of solutions. That's what we're going to talk about tonight, but in a different topic. Tonight's guest is a frequent guest on Evident Footprints. He himself is a researcher, a journalist, a metaphysician. He hosts a website called educate-yourself.org. And he's been doing a lot of really interesting analysis of things that are seen in the skies as a result of chemtrails. He's been studying the alternative modalities of healing, and we're going to talk about some of those tonight with our special guest, my good friend, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be on with you again, and look forward to sharing another hour together with what I hope is stimulating and interesting information.
Well, yes. Now, in the past shows, we've been attempting to get into the research and some of the healing modalities discovered and written about by Dr. Hulda Clark. And I know that you have a tremendous respect for her work, and you're not selling anything that she makes, but you do promote her work, and I want to make that clear to folks. I doubt if we're going to be taking calls in the first half hour or 45 minutes of the show. We may change that. There's a lot of material that Ken wants to cover, so I want to let the listening audience know that it's not that we don't want to talk to you, that Ken's been struggling for the past month to get this information out to you. So I want to give him that opportunity this evening. So, Ken, all yours.
Thank you, Tom. I'm just going to take a few minutes before I launch into some very, I think, important information about learning how to take care of all health-related matters yourself at home. I just want to talk about the U.S. Census this year, being the year of 2010. I heard on NPR this morning on the radio a brief statement by Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, who's the mayor of Los Angeles, putting out a message to the public that they're looking to get 100% compliance this time around, this year, with the census. And you'll be hearing these messages often on radio and TV. And there'll be politicians, celebrities, government officials, you name it, who will be promoting the idea of how necessary and beneficial it is to all our lives that we participate in the census, because the politicians will usually go on and on about how the census allocates funding from the federal government to state and city governments, and that the more people who are counted in the census, the more dollars they get for school and all these wonderful things that supposedly go to the benefit of the citizens of this country. Now, the problem is that the U.S. Census has turned into an extension of Big Brother in a big way. The original purpose of the census was just to take a head count in the various districts, county, towns, cities, states across America, so the apportionment of legislatures could be fairly made, etc. And what they've done with the census, though, in recent decades, particularly this current one of 2010, is to turn it into a vehicle to obtain or attempt to obtain personal information about the people of this country that it was never intended for, but they're attempting to use it in that way. Now, as you know, and approximately April of last year, there was quite a bit of buzz, interest on the internet, because members of ACORN were going around in kind of a pre-census year information gathering mission, in which they were gathering GPS coordinates on everyone's home, and they were sending this information to the government. We talked about it a bit at the time that, you know, you don't have to allow people who you don't want on your private property to enter your property, and that you have every right, if you post no trespassing signs, to get them off your property or take very strong countermeasures to force them off your property. Now, we are now in early January of 2010. The census will begin this year. And what people need to know is the following. This is why I just want to reiterate it. The Constitution has a section that calls for the counting of heads. Specifically, it's Article 1, Section 2. The paragraph that applies is rather short. I'm going to read it. It's only three or four sentences. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states, which may be included within this union, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding to the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. The actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of the Congress of the United States, and within every subsequent term of 10 years, in such manner as they shall by law direct. That's the whole of it right there. I just read it to you. Now, the first part, referring to free persons, et cetera, of course, this is a time of the signing of the Constitution. And at that time, there was people who had status of slaves. There were people who were indentured, et cetera. So they had these different categories. But the 14th Amendment, et cetera, following the Civil War, eliminated those subcategories. Now, the part that applies here is the words, the actual enumeration, shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of Congress and within every subsequent term of 10 years. So they're saying there's an enumeration. What does an enumeration mean? Enumeration means a counting of heads. It means a counting or a listing. And it says that it's going to occur every 10 years. And now the very last part of Article 1, Section 2, the very last phrase of that, the final sentence is, in such manner as shall by law direct. Now, we have a census out of control, U.S. Census Bureau, that has taken upon itself to pass all sorts of statutory regulations and rules, et cetera, in the U.S. Code that greatly expand the information gathered by census takers. And when the Census Bureau says, if you go to their website, et cetera, or if you listen to their well-trained minions, they'll tell you, it's the law, You have to comply with the census. It's the law. You can be subject to $5,000 fine, arrest, imprisonment. They've got a whole litany of threats that they're ready to throw at people. And here's the reality. The only information the Constitution requires is for a census to be taken every 10 years and a counting and enumeration. Therefore, you, as a citizen, are obliged to tell them how many people live in a household. And I think it only applies to adults. So if there's two adults living in your household, you say two. It actually only applies to citizens of the United States as well. So if there's only one citizen living in that household, then you reply one. You are not required to give your name, your age, how many toilets are in your house, how often you take birth control pills, and all the other add-on questions that they've expanded this census form with. Constitutionally, you are not required to provide any of that information. And how far they'll actually go in trying to promote the enforcement of an unconstitutional U.S. code regulation remains to be seen. But my thought is that if enough people start getting ready now to first learn the law, everyone should obtain that paragraph that I just read, so they know what the constitutional basis is. And then there are now a number of websites, Patriot-type websites, that have articles about the 2010 census and how you are only required to just give the information I said. People should look into it now so that when the census takers comes around to your neighborhood, you can do what one fellow, I was reading a letter this morning when they had the 2000 census, what he did in his neighborhood in Queens, New York. He was well known in the neighborhood, had a reputation of being not exactly a lover of government regulators and regulations, and very much a pro-libertarian type person who was known in the neighborhood. Apparently he ran for political office in the past. And when the census takers started to enter his neighborhood, he found out about it within 20 minutes, and he and a group of other neighbors who they had already prepared for this went out to greet the census takers and were accompanying them as they went from house to house, and they were telling every household that you're only required to tell the census taker by constitutional law how many adults are living in the house and nothing else. And if you wish to volunteer more, that's fine, but you aren't required to. And there was sort of a confrontation there. The census workers called in the supervisor, and he came out there, and the supervisor is accusing the guy of interfering with official federal government census business, yada, 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 and he even called the cops. They got the cops out.
Are you speaking about employees of Acorn?
No, this was in the year 2000. That was the census this fellow was talking about. So he didn't, I don't think Acorn was involved in the 2000 census deal, where they're going to be in this one this year. But it was just an anecdote from this fellow in Queens who explained how they had prepared. And the upshot of the story was, by the time the cops came out there, which this guy, being well known in the neighborhood, just happened to know the cops who responded to the call, and he made it clear that they were, you know, being perfectly civil and polite and calm with these census workers and wasn't in any way trying to harass them, but they had a right to walk around their own neighborhood, and they could also talk to residents who opened the door to the census workers as well as the census workers could. And the cops agreed, yeah, he says, there's nothing illegal about that. Long story short, the census workers essentially folded up their tents. They realized that the whole neighborhood was tuned in to the facts about the census, that you only have to tell how many people are, how many adults are in the household, and nothing else. And they packed up their tents that year in that particular neighborhood. If we could do this or have people take it upon themselves to talk to their neighbors and prepare for the census before the census takers and or their representatives, which is more likely going to be the case, such as Acorn, come with their demands that you provide the information and their threats of imprisonment, fines, et cetera, before you get to that stage, to get prepared ahead of time. And I think we could have let's say a very unusual event this year, in which, if because of the internet, if this idea takes off with enough people around the country, people can really get a sense of how they, in fact, are in charge of the government, and that the Census Bureau's overreaching of their authority and what the Constitution enables them to gather, this could be a good year for people to realize that as threatening and coercive and domineering as the government attempts to be through their political puppets like Villaraigosa or through their media prostitutes who will, echo all the benefits that are going to how it's going to help us all in the apportionment and funding for schools and how all that stuff. Instead of capitulating to that crew, people by getting organized in advance and get prepared to make it very clear to census workers, and of course everyone will pretty much get a census form in the mail. And there too, the government is going to try to placate the public by saying there won't be a long form census this time around. Apparently in 2000, so many people got upset with their 52 question, questionnaire, how many toilets you have, et cetera, that they placated people to have them think that there's only going to be short form. Well, first, my understanding of that is not true. But secondarily, whether it's short or long form, you aren't required to answer the questions other than the one that the Constitution calls for. How many adults live on the premises? Name, ages, all the other information a number of people think they have to turn over to the census is not required by the Constitution. And if we went a step further, and people not only got prepared, they had little, let's say, mock practice runs with people playing the role of the overbearing census taker, the threatening census taker, etc. And people, if you want to answer your door, by the way, you're not required to answer your door. If they ring your bell, you're not required to say anything. If they keep on ringing your door and you don't answer, there is no law against that. So if you don't want to answer your door and just remain quiet, you have every right to do that. Because once people start talking through the door, even such as who is it, and then the exchange starts, and then the coercion and all the other stuff will start if you don't acquiesce quickly. If you don't respond at all, they don't really know whether you're there or not, and they could bang on your door till the cows come home. You are not required to answer it, and there's no law is being broken. They will send you the form in the mail anyway. So I'll stop here. I may bring it up again in other talks. I'm hoping people who hear these words will take it upon themselves, who have more time to devote to this than I, take it upon themselves to start this organization. There should be websites devoted to this. They should have some sort of name that identifies census control, perhaps, .org or census. Census control. I don't want to use the terms revolt or rebellion because it's not that. It's more of a matter of seeing to it or making it your business that the Census Bureau doesn't overstep its constitutional mandate. And so I think census control maybe is a good word. But there should be a chapter, if you will, in every state. And if this was organized widely, people could really put, let's say, a feather in their bonnet to realize that they are the masters of this government and not the other way around. And the census go around, to me, is a perfect opportunity for people to feel the empowerment that the Constitution gives them and that this government steadily has been robbing us from us. Certainly for the last 100 years or so, and never more than today. I mean, we have a country of sheeple, as they say, because the government has intimidated us so thoroughly as the decades have rolled along. Did you want to make any comment yourself, Donovan?
Well, I'm thinking up some names for the group. You could call it Dollars and Census.
Well, it just occurred to me today to just broach this subject. I'll probably put my thoughts down in an article and post it. But I'm sure there's many people who – there's already a number of Patriot sites that are keyed into this issue. But I would love to see a more of a grassroots, let's say, effort to organize people so that people don't feel like they're individuals fighting this, megalith of a government on their own. By talking it up with their neighbors and working out a plan of action with their neighbors, the census workers or whoever represent them are going to be the ones on the defensive. It won't be the other way around. They're planning, you know, they've hired on thousands of people using, you know, taxpayer money, stimulus money. They're spending billions on this, billions of our of taxpayers' money to coerce us into providing all this information that the government is not entitled to at all. And, of course, we know very well that once it's in the hands of the government, besides the government using it for their purposes, they have all these corporate pals who make these huge contributions to their coffers so that they, you know, continue to pass legislation that's benefits the corporate elites of this country. And of course, they'll use this information to gear their, you know, their product line, their marketing, their advertising, etc., to the demographics that, you know, a census, which, you know, people provide all this information to, would provide. So there's plenty of money to be made by our corporate friends on this, and besides the intrusive information that you don't really want to give to the government. So I'll stop with that, but I just hope this grows into a movement of sorts. This would be a wonderful opportunity to show people that they control this government, even though, you know, we're led to believe that we're under the thumb of the government. But the Constitution is our guarantee of control over the government. And they simply cannot exceed. They will try, of course. And they're famous as specious, false, misleading arguments to justify their positions. But they're just that. They're specious and false. If you're an intelligent human being, if you can read the English language, read what the Constitution says, and see what others have said about this very issue. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. This is what that means. Any other law, statutory law, passed by any bureaucracy, government entity bureaucracy, federal, state, local, municipal, etc., that is in violation of a provision of the Constitution, is therefore null and void. That's what the supreme law of the land means. The Constitution trumps all other statutory rules, regulations, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, yeah. You know, this predisposition to know how many toilets you have, maybe you should call it Project Outhouse. You know, it'll take them a while to catch on anyway.
Yep.
What it's about. I'm sure. is that a question they're going to ask in relation to the carbon tax issues, or you know?
Well, I'm hoping maybe people who are maybe been trained by the census people or have inside information or used to work for that group and can better provide greater insights. I sure like to know what specifically is being told to people who will be going from door to door collecting census, including, you know, the acorn types. And I just love to, you know, find out more what the government is telling these people. Of course, they're telling them the sort of specious arguments that I alluded to as to the legal basis for the enforcement of all this. And it would be nice to know specifically what all the questions were on the census. So maybe somebody who has access to that info could provide it before, you know, the things are actually you know, received in the mail. It'd be useful to know exactly what they were up to. You can be sure they've been preparing for this for a long time, and I think we're going to be in for some real surprises this year. I'm hoping the government is going to be in for some real surprises this year. I think people patience is wearing thin with the government's heavy-handedness in every single area. As you know, I won't take but a minute to allude to this. This latest, what shall we call it, false flag scenario with the so-called underwear bomber. They want to, now they're talking about putting these full-body scanners in every airport. Well, I'm already seeing, thank God, some articles on the internet. People aren't going to go along with this, and I certainly hope the rebellion happens sooner rather than later. I'm certainly not going to subject myself to X-ray radiation just for the sake of getting on a plane. This all radiation is harmful to you, and if the full body scanner, X-rays are X-rays. There is no such thing as a lower-level safe X-ray dose. No such thing.
Well, that event that you're referring to, the flight from Holland, Amsterdam to Detroit, was an intelligence gaffe.
Right.
You know that, too, now.
Yes, right, so. Right. But, of course, you know, the news is, all the AM talk radio, NPR, my favorite propaganda outlet, they've been buzzing since that, incident. It's been going on for a week now, at least, about how, this Obama, I guess, gave a speech a day or two, the Indonesian imposter, about the need for more vigilant security, as if the government, because of the false flag of 9/11, passing the Patriot Act and creating Homeland Security and all that crap, as if they aren't going way over any reasonable boundaries of search and surveillance when you go to an airport these days, as if it's lacking. I mean, this is insane. What they want to do is go to even a greater degree of invading your privacy to the point of X-raying your body having a look at what you look like, particularly, for women, et cetera, girls, and it's outrageous. It's simply outrageous. Taking off your shoes, that wasn't that name of that clown, that mind control clown, Richards, with the sneakers. Another intelligence operation. Now we all got to take off our belts. We got to take off our shoes. Now they're going to X-ray you. It's got to stop. It's got to stop. And people really need to get up in arms. I mean, these machines are tremendously expensive, I understand, and to put one in every airport, people are just going to stop flying. How many people are going to go, keep on going, getting yourself X-rayed and all the damage that it does to your DNA, etc.? People just stop flying. So, the psychopaths are running the asylum, and if enough people really get up in arms and just start talking to those prostitutes in Washington and telling them enough is enough. Drop the body scan crap. In fact, they can drop the whole Patriot Act provisions, and we can go back to the sort of sanity that we had in traveling or, getting on a plane or getting on a train, and repeal the whole nine yards and roll us back to because as we know, there is no war on terror. There never was. The whole thing is created by our plotting friends to turn this country into a police state. So anyway, I'll stop with that so I can spend the remainder of the time to continue on what I started with a couple weeks ago, or perhaps 3 weeks ago, talking about methods to learn how to take care of yourself at home. I mentioned repeatedly that I found the books of Dr. Huldah Clark to be especially beneficial in explaining to the average reader without any science background, biology background, et cetera, explaining to the average person how the body works and what causes disease condition to arise. And she, in my opinion, now there's plenty of good books, on health. I mean, God, there's tens of thousands of them, and I have a fairly large library. So this is in no way a put down of all the other people who've been spending, you know, their entire careers putting out wonderful books. There's plenty of good authors out there, but I particularly like Huldah Clark's information because she had a wide background in biology and physiology and botany, chemistry. She had a very wide background, and she was a good student. She developed this simple instrument we talked about last time, simple device. It's called a synchrometer. But it's one of the most important diagnostic tools that you could possibly possess. And what's neat is that she explains in her book how to build and make your own synchrometer at home. You don't have to, if you don't have any money to speak of, you can make your own for really just a few dollars in electronic parts. Learning how to use it takes practice. Learning how to use it so you can do it with a high degree of accuracy takes practice. But again, those who invest the time will find that they have at their disposal one of the most useful tools to detect what substances are in the body that, let's say, you want in the body, and what substances that you don't want in the body. It's a detection tool, and it's supremely accurate in its ability to determine whether you have certain pathogens in your body, whether you have certain chemicals in your body that are harmful to you. And with this knowledge, you can adjust your therapies to your body, and by testing yourself again after, you've applied a therapy designed to knock out a specific bug, that a pathogen in your body. Well, if before the therapy you detected the presence of this pathogen, and by the way, the synchrometer can zero in on the specific organ or tissue mass that the pathogen as an example, is located in. So if you have a particular, let's say, bacilli in your liver, for instance, the synchrometer can tell you that it's in your liver. And if it's not in your liver, but in another organ, you can go through a series of slides of various organ tissues of the body and determine where that organism is in your body. And then you could direct a therapy to that location to neutralize the pathogen. So let's say you detected a bug in your liver before you applied some therapy, let's say electronic frequency therapy, which we'll talk about a bit tonight, and then you can test yourself again on the synchrometer, and if you get a negative reaction, which means the bug is now dead, then that's a very valuable piece of information. So her discoveries, which she has freely shared with the public since she began publishing her books, are largely based on the detective work she has done over a couple decades using this device called the synchrometer. So that's why I'm particularly drawn to her books, because she does reveal so much information that was known incompletely in earlier decades. She's particularly has been very adept at tracing out the genealogy of cancer's growth and progression in the body, and that is all cancers. Now, the subject of cancer detection the whole subject of cancer is a big field, but she's helped simplify the detection aspect of it. For instance, cancer really refers to a malignant growth in the body. Malignant refers to the idea that cells, which if they're normal and healthy, divide at a certain rate of division, so that when they hit a certain age, let's say, that they're programmed to produce another cell, let's say skin, to replace the previous cell that has, let's say, gone through its life cycle. How many days or how many weeks or how many months that may be. That's the normal way cells are programmed by our DNA and nature to divide. But certain conditions can occur in a normal human cell, or any animal cell for that matter, and certain conditions will cause the cell to degenerate into a more primitive form of cell. And typically the cell loses the organization that is normally afforded to it by the nucleus. And so cancer cells typically don't have a nucleus in them. So they become this more primitive cell, which divides uncontrollably. It keeps on triggering into the division and growth cycle, which should only normally occur at a certain point where the cell is normally going into its decaying phase and you need to replace it with another healthy cell. So when we talk about cancer, it's important to understand that it just doesn't mean a growth, because we've all heard of, you can have growths take place. You've heard of benign tumors, yes? We've all can have growths that take place. It doesn't mean they're malignant. So cancer means a malignancy. It's this uncontrolled cellular division that goes on. Now, with the synchrometer, for instance, it's quite easy to detect whether this uncontrollable growth is occurring anywhere in your body, because there's a chemical that's produced in a malignant situation that causes the cell to trigger into this primitive form and to begin this uncontrolled replication of itself. And it's called orthophosphotyrosine. And Huldah Clark discovered, probably in the late 80s, that this marker always accompanied malignancies. So she could easily find out whether you had this substance in you or not by merely putting a sample bottle of this molecule on one of the plates of the synchrometer. And then if she tested your whole body or a piece of DNA from your body, let's say your saliva, which is a perfect way to treat or to examine somebody else on a synchrometer who's not physically there. You can just use a sample of his saliva. Normally it's just you wet a piece of paper towel, small piece of paper towel, and put it in a Ziploc baggie. And then if a synchrometer tester had that, that saliva sample would serve as you. So they would get the same information from that saliva sample that they could get if you were sitting right there next to the synchrometer tester. You get exactly the same response. So if you put a vial of this orthophosphotyrosine on one of the plates of the synchrometer, and you put the witness, so let's say a saliva sample of a party on the other plate, you can find out whether that chemical is in that party or not. And if it's not there, then there is no active malignancy. If the chemical marker is there, if you get a resonant response, and then it means there is a malignancy active somewhere in the body. Then you could do further tests to find out which organ has the orthophosphotyrosine in it, and that would tell you which organ the malignancy is in. So this tool is really important. I talked about it last time, but I'm emphasizing again this time. Without this tool, she would not have this synchrometer I'm talking about. She would not have discovered many of the fabulous things she did discover in the last 20 years of her life. That's why her books are important. She has discovered things which no other investigators have come upon, because she's been using that tool for so long. She became very adept at it. But anybody can become adept at its use. The Huldah Clark people have a videotape that talks about, explains, it was done by a woman named Carmen Myers, who's a very, a very good, synchrometer, tester. She's been doing it for a long time. She's very adept at it. She's in San Diego, California. And I'm pretty sure I have her phone number and her email address on the same page where I have the books of Huldah Clark. I have no business arrangement with her other than the fact that she was the gal who is featured in this training video, and I've talked to her on the phone a couple of times. She's a very pleasant person, and she's very adept at doing this work. So if you want to, there are others besides her, but you can find synchrometer testers who can get a sample from you if you want them to do the testing for you. But you can learn how to do it yourself. So if you study Huldah Clark's books, you're going to get a much better idea on A, how the body works, B, why disease conditions arise. If you understand what's causing the disease condition to arise, you can stop participating in the genesis of disease opportunities in your body by, you know, avoiding taking certain substances into your body, onto your body, exposing yourself to certain polluting environments, et cetera. She found earlier in her career that cancer, especially, has certain pathogenic organisms, they're parasites, always associated with them. Her first book, which she, I think, published in 1994, called The Cure for All Cancers, talked about a liver fluke, a Chinese liver fluke that's normally just was thought of for people in the area of botany and biology, etc., to only exist in Asia and China and only in you know, the, I think it was liver sheep, perhaps. She found that this organism always was present in the tissue of cancer victims, this particular parasite. And she found that certain substances enabled this organism to thrive and grow. And one substance she found that was very critical to the, let's say, the life cycle of this parasite is isopropyl alcohol. Now, people don't know it, but we ingest and or put isopropyl alcohol on our body quite frequently because besides just buying it in the drugstore, with, you know, it says 70% isopropyl alcohol or 90% alcohol, instead of doing it that way, you're getting it. There are as many food products that and liquid products that we're getting in the grocery store, for instance, that have isopropyl alcohol in very tiny amounts, but they're there. For instance, the government requires the people who have bottling facilities, whether it's for water or whether it's for any sort of drinks, they're required to clean the tubing and the vessels that this liquid runs through as it's being bottled with, guess what? Isopropyl alcohol.
Well, they put it in cosmetic products too.
Thank you. So, exactly. There is a large range of products in which isopropyl alcohol is mixed in with the product. So when you apply the product to your skin, you're absorbing that isopropyl alcohol. It doesn't take much. This is a what people need to understand. The residue can be down to the parts per billion and still allow this organism to thrive. Now, she also found that organisms are also enabled, if you will, by certain polluting metals that are in the body and will metals which normally should not be found in the body interfere with enzyme systems.
Yeah.
Now, there is a if you studied basic chemistry in high school or college, you know that the periodic chart of elements, certain metals will displace other metals because they have a stronger bonding affinity than, let's say, metal A. And if you have, let's say, a critical metal that's part of an enzyme molecule, usually enzymes do have a metal as part of their molecule. And if you're in your body somehow through cosmetics, through food, through various contaminants, pollutants, even pharmaceutical drugs, etc., if you've gotten a metal which is a competitor for the desirable metal, I'm just making let's say iron. And if you have a competitor for the iron that will knock off the iron molecule from the enzyme and replace it with itself, and I don't know off the top of my head which particular metal might do that. I'm just using it as an example. The enzyme will no longer work in the way it was designed to work. It will not cause a specific reaction that nature intended for it. So, in essence, you've lost the action of that enzyme. I'll give you one example, only because, you know, my wife is Japanese. A large percentage of Japanese people have a genetic situation, let's say, in which they cannot produce a particular enzyme that is necessary to break down alcohol in the liver. I used to know the name of it, but it just doesn't come to me off the top of my head. As a result, when those folks attempt to drink alcohol, they get flushed very quickly because they're having an allergic reaction. The alcohol, the liver is unable to break down the alcohol because it's lacking this enzyme. Okay? So therefore, they'll get flushed, and the body's trying to push the alcohol literally out through the skin. So, you know, the capillaries will become engorged, et cetera. And these folks can't really drink much because first they get red as a beet, but they feel very, you know, uncomfortable, lightheaded, et cetera. So they can't really drink much alcohol as a result of... So we have literally thousands and thousands of these enzymatic reactions going on in the body. And if we have the wrong metals in us, it will cause this substitution that I just referred to, and that enzyme will no longer work. Well, Hulda-Clark identified a number of these metals and how they interfere, not only with enzyme action, but they also enable certain type of pathogenic organisms, certain type of parasites to grow in the body. And if the metal wasn't there, that particular pathogen can't grow. It's a necessary metal for that pathogen. I'll give you an example. Salmonella, the common bug that's associated with food poisoning. It needs the metal gold in order for it to proliferate in the body. And one of the reasons I wrote a lengthy article about 4 years ago, I think it was in 2005, warning people that I'm opposed to the notion of ingesting colloidal gold. I'm also opposed to the idea of using what is called monoatomic gold, which is touted by many on various websites as being some sort of magic elixir that's going to cause all sorts of consciousness expansion. And one of the reasons I cautioned is that gold is not normally a metal which the body uses for biological purposes. But beyond that, it enables certain pathogens to grow, salmonella being one of them. Prions, we've all heard of mad cow disease, is also enabled by gold. So having the knowledge of what metals and what solvents are aiding and abetting the growth of pathogens in your body is very useful information. And Hulda-Clark points all this information out in great details in her book.
Now, I have a couple of questions here.
Yeah.
In regard to the metals that she studied, when you consider tap water, for example, and the fluoridation of tap water, which is a process derived from the toxic waste products of aluminum manufacturing.
Right.
Has she published anything in regard to the quantity of aluminum that might be in tap water or other metals that...
Yes. Oh, yes. She does address fluoride and chlorination of water in substantial detail in her books. And
now, for the people that are listening that know and have heard about drinking tap water,
yes,
and I still know many, even though they know that this is not healthy, they do it in a pinch.
Mm-hmm.
They'll drink a glass of tap water because they don't have any plastic bottled water or other beverages available.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's sad when they do that because that toxicity doesn't take long for it, especially if you've purged a lot of it, for it to get back into your system, you know, and find a home where it can hide.
Right.
So I'm interested in what she said about that. For those.
Oh yes, she has a great deal. Mind you that she's trying to remember the total number now. It's either 6 or 7 books. Since her first one came out, which I believe was 1994. Her first book was A Cure for All Cancers. Perhaps four of her books have the word cancer in the title. Do not assume that the book is only about cancer, and if you don't have cancer, that this book, no. This is the case with many books, you can't have a paragraph for a title of a book. You're limited to a few words. And since many people are today succumbing to cancer, she puts that in the title of her book. But she covers the entire gamut of diseases of men of humankind in her book. So the word she. There's a great deal of information that's specifically tailored to cancer victims, but that's information is also in addition to information about all disease conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And the genesis of disease conditions is very interesting to study exactly how and why it comes about. With this knowledge, you are in a wonderful position to prevent yourself from, keep yourself from using substances, products, etc., that are polluting you, and you can reverse the condition. This is the method in which you're undoing a disease condition. You essentially want to work backwards. It's because all diseases, begin with an onset because certain, let's say, imbalances were created. And then as the imbalances become more acute over time, the disease progresses or arises to the level that we'll call it a disease, let's say arthritis. But there was a specific beginning point, and she discusses this genesis of disease condition. This is very useful information, because if you already got arthritis or any other disease condition, including AIDS or cancers or heart disease or whatever, you can reverse the process once you understand the process. And depending on how old you are, depending on how long you've been polluting yourself, your degree of success will vary, but in most cases you can pretty much get out of it. She calls the title of many of her books includes the words cure, and this is something which the government doesn't want anyone in the alternative health industry to know about or to state. Because it's of course it's against the law.
And consider that we're living in the land of the free with freedom of speech, and they don't want us to use the word
exactly.
Cure.
Right.
Excuse me, cure.
Yeah, exactly. So she too,
I said it.
Thumbed her nose
Yeah.
At government censors in exactly the same way she uses the term cure in her book, because she doesn't ameliorate and, let's say, mitigate or, let's say, control. That's the word that the orthodoxy likes, is control, manage. No, no, no. She's using the word cure, finish, kaput, no more. And that's exactly the sort of results you'll achieve if you study her information very carefully and, more importantly, apply her information. Now, this lady has done a marvelous job of identifying what agents, what substances, etc., are responsible for allowing these disease conditions to take place. And I'm sorry, it's not like just a list of 5 or 10 things to do and you're going to be fine. It's not that simple. You have to take the time to study the information. There's a lot of information to learn. And we have been acclimated, thanks to industry, thanks to the commercial producers of this world, we have been acclimated to a diet that is largely polluted. And because of food processing over the decades has become more and more devitalizing of food. I recall you did more than one show with Michael Anthony. He brought this topic up. It's very important. Modern food that you're getting out of a grocery store is greatly devitalized of the life force. And so she discusses this in her books, and that if you want to put nutrients into your body that have a greater life force, well, you have to cut down on the processing part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, there are books devoted to what's called a raw food diet.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they're advocating that, and it's not necessary to go totally raw food, because people who have been acclimated to a cooked diet just can't instantaneously go to raw food, particularly if you're older, because you don't have the capacity, the strength, the digestive strength to digest the raw food diet. But you could acclimate yourself to a more raw food diet. Anybody could do that, because you can. There's this marvelous thing known as juicing. And assuming you get the right type of juicers that will hold on to more of the nutrients that you want to be ingesting, you can take foods that are normally hard to digest if you just chew them, you know, swallow them in bulk. If you juice them, you can get these nutrients into you in a more easily digestible form and still be essentially on a raw food diet. You know, Charlotte Gerson has a clinic in Mexico, and she has another, office, if you will, in San Diego. But the work she does, she works with Mexican doctors, et cetera, at the clinic, I think, in Tijuana. It's based on a simple therapy, which her father, Max Gerson, who originally came from Germany in the 1920s, had developed initially to cure victims of tuberculosis. That's how Max Gerson started his work, because tuberculosis was a major problem, especially in Europe in the latter part of the 19th century and the early part of the 20th century. A lot of people died of what was called consumption at the time, and people had to go to sanitariums for lengthy periods of time to recover it, etc. So anyway, Max Gerson got his start in curing TB patients, but in the process of working on TB patients, he noticed he cured a lot of cancer, people who also had cancer. So he gradually, as the TB problem subsided, he devoted more and more of his work to cancer. And he had a therapy that's called the Gerson therapy. It is based on drinking 13 glasses of freshly made juice every day. And they have some other extracts they give them of liver and so forth. But the mainstay of the Gerson diet is these freshly made vegetable juices, 13 glasses that's taken a day. So when you go to their clinic, this is what happens. They come in with a glass of juice every hour or so. And it has amazing results. So the Gerson diet is simple. Of course, you can do it at home. They have workbooks available that you can learn the juice, the same thing that they're providing there at their clinic. You can do all this at home. The idea is, though, is that these freshly juiced vegetables, fruits, etc., contain vital substances that in the raw state, without being heated, without being pasteurized, etc., retain certain necessary elements that have a higher percentage of life force in them. They also contain natural enzymes. A lot of people aren't aware that foods in the raw states, including animal foods, contain enzymes, in that when we cook foods, we kill the enzymes. Temperature just has to rise to about 118 degrees or so, and most enzymes naturally found in vegetables, fruits, etc., are destroyed. And therefore, your body has to produce the enzyme to break down the molecules of that food substance. Well, if you had raw food more often, you could get the enzymes from the food itself, and therefore you save energy on your body. You don't have to produce something that nature has already provided to you in the raw state. So part of understanding how to get yourself better is to stop polluting your body with, you know, foods that are devitalized of the life force, and to stop using products on your body. I'm talking about shampoos. There's a large variety of products that most of us have in our kitchen, in our bathrooms, that are detrimental to our health. Hulda Clark explains to you what those products are and how to substitute other products that accomplish the same work, if you will, without the polluting side effect. Again, all this information is contained in her books. I have all of her books listed on my website. I have at the top of every page on my website, I have a series of links. There's rows. I think I'm just going to count them, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. There's 13 rows currently. And the sixth row from the bottom, slightly to the right of the middle of the page, you'll see a link that says Dr. Hulda Clark Books. It gives you the names of all her books. Her training manual on the synchrometer is listed there. The telephone number, the website of her publisher is listed there. You could order directly from the publisher. You could also get them from Amazon.com. Many of the links that I have there go to either to her publisher, which is called New Century Press, or in some cases they go to Amazon.com. But the publisher is as good a choice as any, and all the books are available there. Some of her books, not all of her books, but some of her books are available in multiple languages, so that people who, let's say the German, the Japanese, Polish, there's a number of languages, they're available at the publisher's website. So there's quite a number now of other languages available, but not in all the books. It's usually the more popular books, The Cure for All Cancers being one of them. She also did another book in 1993 called The Cure for HIV/AIDS, which is tailored more towards that disease, but again, it contains a wide cornucopia of information on other disease conditions besides HIV and AIDS. Anyway, all her books are listed there. I have no connection with the publisher at all. I just put them up there for convenience so that people can access. In some cases, Hulda Clark wanted some of her information. By the way, she intentionally did not put a copyright on her books. So She doesn't want other people, of course, selling her books. She didn't want that, but she wanted people to be able to freely copy the information. Mm-hmm. So in some cases, there are parts of her books that are available as online downloads, and I have three or four of them listed on that page as well. So you can perhaps start the process of reading her books by reading some of the online material that's available. But there is nothing more convenient than having the book on your shelf.
Yeah.
Nothing more convenient than that.
Ken, we've got a caller. He did wait an hour.
Okay.
So I figure this is probably related to the topic. So if you don't mind us taking a call,
okay.
We've got Rodney in South Carolina. Rodney, welcome to Evident Footprints. How are you this evening?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm doing very well. I gave it to Dr. K, and he looked it up and found it. The 7-second soundbite, the X-ray machines. In the UK, there's a big controversy because going and using those machines violates child pornography laws.
What? Yes, actually, I heard that somewhere in the news. Someone mentioned that. So,
oh, he looked it up. He read the entire thing after the break. He thanked mm-hmm. me profusely. He said, "You lawyers, listen up. See, most people don't understand. Child pornography goes up to the age of 18, and in some places, 21.
Well, they have also laws against voyeurism as well. I mean, you know.
Exactly. Now, also, it's against voyeurism. It's also invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
I don't know all the laws because I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, big time. So it's not only that, but there's the invasion of your DNA by harmful X-rays. So if that is, let's say, the technique that will put a stop to this insanity with these full-body scanners, based on what you just said, Rodney, great. Let's go for whatever it takes to stop it.
Ken,
the point
I don't
is, it needs to be stopped.
Ken, I don't know. I just, when I catch these 7-second sound bites, I put them out to the people that I know I can try to help, and they can run with it. And like I said, when I told Dr. K, he just said, "Oh, thank you." And he read it all and studied it, and we talked about it. He says, keep telling people. So when I heard you bring it up, I thought, I got to tell you before I go to bed. Here's maybe the Achilles heel to it. I don't know. I know they're not going to X-ray my butt. No.
Well, I think if you took a poll, not a Tavistock poll, but just a regular poll of all the listeners, I don't think you get one dissenting voice. Everybody's going to agree with you.
Well, here's another thing that I heard on the regular newscast, and they're laughing about it, and I was very insulted. They're looking up and going, oh, well, looky here. Well, we all know what somebody's going to do with this. They're going to put this on YouTube, and they're going to be selling this as porno, and you know they're going to make a real big industry off this, and I'm sitting there looking at it going, try it.
Yeah, either that or they're smut films, you know.
It's disgusting.
That's a topic in and of itself. But don't want to get off of tonight's topic, but I appreciate that information. Can you send us something on that, a link? Or
I don't know where he looked it up, Don. I just gave him the information, and when he put me on hold for the break, he found it, he read it back to me, and he didn't tell me where he found it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it came out of the UK, like maybe The Guardian or one of those?
It came out of there someplace because he found it. He found it with that 3-minute break, and you know how quick they are on BBS. I mean, on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
Now
I heard that it may be on. I just got a text message. It may be on whatreallyhappened.com. Although I have my doubts about whatreallyhappened.com.
I don't know, because like I said, gentlemen, I'm a kindergartner. I'm still learning how to use this thing. I just know how to catch that 7-second soundbite off the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a master at it. I'll give kudos to who taught me. Years ago, it was Raleigh James when she used to fill in for Art Bell. And back then, 20 years ago, she kept saying, remember the sound bites. Sometimes you'll only hear them once, and if you're lucky, you hear them twice.
Yeah.
That's what you want to pay attention to.
Yeah. Okay, any questions or other comments for our guest, Ken Adachi?
The only other thing I want to say is, Ken, I left you a message. I need to talk to you because your one website or your stuff, I can't. It won't come up for me. So
really?
When, at your convenience, give me a call, and we'll talk about it because I want to ask you those other questions too.
Okay, I will do that. I have to check my phone messages, so I will get to you.
I know you're very busy. I just wanted to let you know, but this is the best I can come up with tonight. Now, we got to put a stop to this. And, gentlemen, thank you. God bless, and we'll talk to you soon. Good night.
Okay, and Happy New Year to you too, Rod.
Yeah.
You too.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's something we can certainly follow up on. That is pertinent to what you opened the show with. So.
Yes, right. Right.
Okay. Didn't want to get you off track. You were really on a roll, but I didn't make Rodney wait a long time. Don't even know how long he was waiting.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, just getting back to the whole notion of taking care of yourself, you need knowledge. And the reason I'm harping on this is that the time has come to put an end to the dependence. For people to put an end to the dependence on first orthodox medicine, which I'm sorry is by and large because orthodox medicine is the stepchild of the pharmaceutical industry. That's what it boils down to. The medical schools, at least the majority, at least since 1910 with the advent of the Flexner Report, favored pharmaceutical, let's say, indoctrination, and at the expense of other types of fields of medicine, homeopathy, naturopathy, they largely, were. Relegated to the dustbin of quackery, so that the pharmaceuticals became dominant in orthodox medicine, and today there has been a long-standing incestuous relationship, if you will, between the insurance industry and the medical and established medicine. I mean, people think one with the other. You know, there used to be a time when doctor visits and the cost, the lab costs, et cetera, were not so incredibly outrageous that, if you didn't need insurance, you can just go to the doctor's office visit. I can remember when I was younger, it was like $15, $17, $20, $22 for a doctor's office visit. And if there was a lab test, it was $22, $25. It was reasonable. Today, they've escalated, all the players have escalated their profits so hugely that without insurance, without having, let's say, a job in which an employer is paying a good part of the insurance tab on your behalf, people can't afford because, they often overcharge. Or are charging beyond people's means. If you have, let's say you're working a minimum wage job, I don't know what the current minimum wage is, but $5.85 an hour or something, I'm guessing. But let's say you have a minimum wage job. After they take out taxes, how much money do you have in a paycheck at the end of the week? Can you really go into a doctor's office and, lay down $180, $200 for an office visit and then another $150, $200 for lab tests, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's beyond most people's means. So poor people are stuck, or even working poor are stuck.
There's a lot behind the scenes that people aren't really aware of. And if you consider the amount of technology that's being used these days and the expense of getting this technology in these offices, it's financed.
Yes.
Or it's outrageously overpriced and
outrageously
used. overpriced. The use of the equipment is outrageously overpriced.
Yes.
To recoup the costs, but all the while that money, again, like the real estate and all and the public property, schools and parks and wetlands and you name it, all of it's being played in these illegal derivatives and hedge funds.
Yes. Yes, Doug.
So that drives the insurance companies, mm-hmm. that drives the banks, that drives the pharmaceutical companies. It's all organized crime.
Exactly.
There is no other way to describe it.
Right. I know. You're saying exactly the way it is, and of course the majority of people haven't got a clue of the extent of the corruption that you're alluding to. I mean,
there's less healing going on today than there was in 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. But again, getting back to the wonderful benefit of reading and studying Huldah Clark's books is that you are your healer. We are all children of God, and we're all endowed with the creative force within us. And people heal themselves. And we have had a tendency, again, because of indoctrination, because of established medicine propaganda, to believe that the guys in the white coats are doing it for us. That's not true. Nature is doing it for you. When you're healed from a disease condition, it's because you healed yourself. And you can learn how to enable the healing process to work, to be unimpeded. And once you have that, you don't need the orthodox medical system. Again, I remind you, I'm talking about chronic disease, degenerative disease. I'm not talking about an auto accident or a gunshot wound or a heart attack, okay? For acute trauma, crisis situations, of course, you need to go to an emergency room, a trauma center, etc. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about normal, let's say, everyday pains and problems that most people go to see a physician about. And if you learn how the body works, you don't need to go to them because you can solve the problem yourself at home. Therefore, if enough people did this, what would happen to this overreaching, unbelievably profitable insurance in industry? It would dwindle greatly. I'm not going to shed any tears about that. For that matter, the orthodoxy will dwindle greatly. And when that happens, their prices will drop. Because if you don't need them anymore, then they can't get you to pay these outrageous amounts of money. You go into the hospital, you spend 20 minutes in the emergency room, you're going to get a bill for $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000. That is an outrage.
Mm-hmm.
And what will happen is that if enough people start taking care of themselves, their business will drop. Their prices will drop. This benefits society at large. The best benefit is to you, the individual person, because people are conditioned to think they need the medical orthodoxy, to think they need insurance. Therefore, if you lose your corporate job, you're in panic city, particularly if you have children. You can take care of your kids yourself. Before the medical orthodoxy became this humongous operation that it is, before the insurance companies were there, people had to take care of themselves. The people of the frontier, or let's say Native American tribes, American Indians, etc., there was no medical orthodoxy to take care of them. They had shamans. They had medicine men to do that. They turned to nature's answers. All the answers to take care of our health are already in nature. You just got to be taught how to recognize it.
Yeah.
We're not taught. You know, we're conditioned to have blinders on.
Yeah, and regarding insurance, I know quite a bit about insurance, and I know that it's illegal for people to advertise insurance, and yet they have actors on TV selling it. Okay, promoting the product, telling you what the policy is going to do. The state laws prohibit that from occurring, yet they get away with it in the mainstream media. And they're doing the same thing with the drug companies and the products, the pharmaceutical products. It's the same issue. Why aren't they arresting these ad agencies and their producers? Well, because everybody gets paid under the table by the pharmaceutical companies.
Yes, to
tolerate breaking the law. See, and this is part of the conditioning as well, is that people are ignorant of the fact that you're paying for health insurance and they have an obligation to pay your bill. It's not negotiable. It shouldn't be manipulated. The charges are what they are because of the services you got, not because the insurance company decides it doesn't want to pay. It wants to profit more. Well, you see, then it goes back into the derivatives and the hedge funds again. You see? The theft and the corruption.
Right.
That's what we're dealing with. So dealing with corrupt people is not going to bring your health. That's the bottom line.
Right.
You know, or the using the corrupt methods of those corrupt people is not going to do it. Now, there are some good doctors out there, and unfortunately, they have to take the lumps with the rest of the ones that are part of this whole scheme, this financial scheme that gets them all wealthy while everybody continues to be ill. That's how they make their money, off of your illness. So stop giving them your money.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
It's simple.
It's very simple.
They're hoping to pass draconian laws now that by not spending the money on that bogus scam, that you're going to be imprisoned.
Right.
No, it's time you start using your head and think about, you know, that's extortion. That's blackmail.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
So, sorry.
I feel the same way, Don. I'm in the same frame of mind when it comes to being forced by government mandate to buy medical insurance that I don't want. I will not use. I mean, I'm not going to be forced to buy an insurance that for a system that, you know, if the day ever came that they reimburse naturopaths, homeopaths, etc., all the many disciplines that I approve, you know, Ayurvedic, for instance, traditional Chinese medicine, practitioners usually have a license in Western medicine, so they can get compensated. But if you have a discipline that's strictly nature-based, a therapy that's strictly nature-based, you can't get insurance coverage on any of that because the orthodoxy is seen to it, you know, again, the pharmaceutical big boys are behind the whole game, see to it that only people who, you know, use the orthodox model, which means pharmaceuticals, are the only ones who get compensation.
They don't want you healed. They want you in the...
Exactly. Okay. So I'm hoping the day will come when if there is some insurance industry that if they'll compensate the people that I would prefer to go to for healing rather than the allopaths who they want to force me to go see, then that would be okay if it was if it was reasonable. But in the interim, if I can learn how to take care of myself and just bypass them altogether, then why wouldn't I do that? Particularly, you don't need money. This is another thing that I admired about Huldah Clark's philosophy and what her books are geared to give you the information so you can take care of yourself without spending a lot of money. In all cases, the therapies she talks about, the items you use are easy to get, and they're not costly at all. I mean, you can get some toys. In most cases, you can make the toys yourself, the zap or the synchrometer, if you're just totally broke. you can still get by. There are some toys that are nice to have, you know, ozone machines. You can get these ultrasonic cleaners to use. There's a lot of little toys. Costs a few bucks, but it's not outrageous. I mean, it's far less than, let's say, one CAT scan would cost you or one MRI would cost you.
Mm-hmm.
You can get, you know, far more information out of a synchrometer than you'd ever get from an MRI or the most expensive, costly labs the orthodoxy got cannot compare to the qualitative information you obtain from a synchrometer, which you could build yourself at home and train yourself at home to use.
Mm-hmm.
So her info is very valuable in, you know, to people, to show them how to take care of themselves at home, how disease originates, and how to reverse the process. Her books are just loaded with extremely valuable information. That's why I continue to urge people to get them, read them and get them. You can spend, you know, all week long studying her books, week in, week out, and not remember it all. There's a great deal of information in her books, and I can't retain it all in my memory, but I have it right there on the shelf. So when someone contacts me, I have this problem or that problem, I go to her books, see what she has to say about it. I have some other books, but I always turn to Hulda Clark's books first, and I give them some thoughts, and I encourage them to get the book themselves and to read the chapters and to learn how to do things. And the people who put in the effort. Now, here's a problem with American society. Maybe it applies to Western Europeans too. I don't know. Americans are lazy. We've been conditioned to be lazy. And as a result, we want people to do our thinking for us, and we want people to take care of us. So far easier to just ask someone else, would you tell me what to do, et cetera? Yeah, I know that's easy, but the only way you're going to get benefit is to acquire the information yourself. Learn to take care of yourself by studying the information. It's right there for you. It's not as if you have to hunt for it. It's right there. Just get the books, start reading, and start applying the information.
Well, that's good advice. And Ken, we're out of time. We're going to have to say goodnight, but I want to let the listening audience know that they can, again, remind them to go to your website, educate-yourself.org. Just click on the Hulda Clark link, Dr. Hulda Clark link at the, what you said, it was six lines up?
Yeah, six lines up from the bottom row, Dr. Hulda Clark books. They're right there, and it'll take you all the information from her publisher. Is there to get any of Dr. Clark's books, and also there's links for four online portions of the book. I don't know if the entire book is online, but a good portion of them, and it can get you started reading. And the information about the synchrometer and synchrometer testing testers, including Carmen Myers of San Diego, is listed on that page as well. So if you're in big trouble and, you know, you need someone to do your synchrometer testing for you right off the bat, well, at least you have one link right there to Carmen. Although there are many others, so okay. she's just one that I got to talk to. And,
all right. You're going to be with us again next week on Wednesday the 13th. So I want to thank you for this wonderful information and all the preparation you must have gone through to learn all this and communicate it, and wish you the best. Say hello to your wife, by the way. Wish her a happy new year.
Thank you, Tom.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, great.
All right, folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, Mr. Ken Adachi. He'll be with us, as I just mentioned, next week, Wednesday the 13th, be sure to tune in. Tomorrow night, our special guest will be talk show host at bbsradio.com and intuitive life coach, Jennifer Hillman. So be sure to tune in tomorrow. I'm sure you're going to find it very interesting. Special thanks also to Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for broadcasting Evident Footprints. And special thanks, not just to bbsradio.com, but to Seth Hendrick on the sound this evening. I want to thank everyone for tuning in, Rodney, our caller, and I want to wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.